The following is an unrehearsed interview with Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Participating in today's public affairs program are Ethan Hewitt at KMA Land Shenandoah and Anna Marie Ward of the Southeast Iowa Union. Ethan, you can start us off with a question for Senator Grassley.
Senator, thank you for your time this afternoon. My question for you is one of the bills that you and Senator Ernst have been looking at lately is one to increase access to over-the-counter birth control. Can you kind of tell us sort of what that bill is all about?
Yes. Birth control pills obviously have been around for 40 or 50 years, completely approved by the Food and Drug Administration, and they should be easier for people to procure without always getting a doctor's prescription each time, maybe once a year. I don't know how often you have to do it, but this would eliminate that getting the doctor's prescription for over-the-counter drugs for birth control. Anna Marie.
So birth control interacts differently with hormones and with different medications and things like that. So how will people know that they're in the right kind of birth control if they aren't required to have a doctor's prescription to get it?
Well, it'd be based upon, I suppose, the first time that's all taken care of, and it's just a matter of repeating that each time that it goes on. We want to be pro-woman. We want to be pro-mother. We want to make sure that we have as easy access to birth control as possible. And this bill is going to help with FDA approval.
Just to kind of stay on that topic a little bit, obviously, you know, we've seen there's been some debate about providing access to this sort of thing. And just to kind of talk a little bit to me why you guys feel it's so important to especially push this bill forward right now to ensure that women do have the access to the appropriate birth control that they might need at this point.
Well, we want to make it as easy as possible. And I think maybe one of the reasons it come up is because of the abortion decision and some indications that maybe birth control could be something that'd be overturned by the Supreme Court. But it's important that women can access affordable and safety this product as well as anything. And I think we just want to make sure that they don't have to worry about the future.
So in order... So if we're talking about the abortion decision that just came and things being overturned, are there any things being put into place for, like, same-sex marriage, either looking at it further or protecting it or, like...
Yeah. I think that Justice Thomas made this an issue that it doesn't have to be an issue because he said prospectively Congress... or the Supreme Court might review some of those old cases, but he's the only one that said that. In fact, then there was another justice, Kavanaugh, that said that isn't anything you're going to have to worry about, and it would take at least four justices to review any of those older decisions, and that isn't going to happen. So there are no known challenges at all on these issues that you and I are talking about. And the one we have talked about so far is based upon just the proposition of making it easier for women. All these are now law of the land, and none of them being challenged.
Sure. And so what would you say what are kind of your thoughts on Congress attempting to, I guess, more or less kind of try to codify some of those rights that we saw, such as gay rights and also the contraception as well that he mentioned?
Well, it's something that we're going through now. I don't think we should have to do it because it's the law of the land, and nobody has to worry about same-sex marriages being legal and constitutional. And 1 1/10 million people have entered into those sorts of arrangements, and it would be, it seems to me that... That's a consideration you got to take into consideration as well. So if it hadn't been for Justice Thomas raising this issue, not in the main opinion, but in his sidebar opinion, what you call a concurrence opinion. This we wouldn't even be talking about this today. Okay, Anna Marie?
Well, I want to make sure I ask you, it's off topic, but I want to make sure I ask you about the Next Generation Fuel Act. It sounds like something happened to progress that recently.
Yeah. Well, I've always been a leader in ethanol and biodiesel, or call them biofuels. And the next generation is to get, is to develop ethanol to the point where it's going to meet the requirements of new engines that are coming online. And the new engines that are coming online are to reduce pollution from internal combustion engines. And we've got to get we've got to get octane up to 95% by 2026, and by 2031 we've got to get it up to 98%. And this tax incentive is to encourage the development of those of those higher standard biofuels.
Yes, kind of on the topic of biofuels, I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on this. Obviously, you know, right now there's a few different carbon pipelines that have been proposed here throughout the Midwest, and more or less to kind of try to boost the ethanol industry to allow them to sell to a lower carbon markets, you know, such as some of the states that are on the coast. I mean, we're obviously there's been some pushback here from residents in terms of, you know, property rights and that and things of that nature. Just kind of what are your thoughts on the introduction of these pipelines to tell when it comes to assisting the ethanol industry?
Well, it happens that I live on a farm in Butler County, Iowa, that has had a natural gas pipeline going through it, I'll bet, a long time before I ever bought the farm, taking natural gas to my hometown in New Hartford. I'll bet that's 60 years ago at least. And so consequently, I know what it's like to have pipelines on your farm. But I've been touring Iowa in my 99-county tour, and this is highly controversial. And I think that, of course, it's an entirely state issue, up to the State Utility Commission to decide what's going to be done. And I think it would be good if the pipeline companies can do a better job of selling it. And I think it'd be good if we could enter the ethanol industry in Iowa. We've got about 40-some ethanol plants. Some of them would be helped by this, that if they would speak up in favor of it as well. But this is a state issue, not anything we're going to be dealing with here in Washington, D.C.
So I know you've talked a lot about how the increase in gas prices have really affected rural citizens. Is there anything that you're working on that should help alleviate some of that?
The answer is the promotion of E15, because it's cheaper than E10 and just regular gasoline with no additives in it. And that's one thing. Klobuchar and I are sponsoring a bill, and I think Ernst is a co-sponsor as well, that would make E15 year-round. Because except for this year, when the president made an exception to it, you couldn't sell it during June, July, August till September 15th, and now this year you can sell it year-round. But if we're really going to promote ethanol, promote a cleaner burning fuel, and help farmers in the process and the ethanol jobs in the process, we should have it year-round, and that's what the Klobuchar Grassley bill does. Ethan.
Sure, and I know a couple other pieces of legislation you're working on in terms of, you know, obviously, we have kind of met that sort of traditional definition of an economic recession. Kind of tell us a little bit about the Middle Class Savings and Investment Act and the Family and Community Inflation Relief Act, and kind of how those try to find a little bit of a balance between helping out this recession, but also preventing the opposite of having too much inflation.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't even introduce these bills without 9% inflation, because, you know, for 10 or 15 years before that, we only had 2% inflation. So when you have tax exemptions or incentives for savings and these two bills involve those two things, and you have 9% inflation, the incentives to save are eaten up, and the benefits you get from filing your income taxes when there's credits in there, and they're worthless now with 9% inflation. So we would adjust all of these laws to reflect that inflation. It's just that simple. We call it indexing, if you want to use a technical term, but it's updating the tax code to reflect the realities of 9% inflation, and would be automatic in future years, even if we only had 2% inflation sometime into the future. Anna Marie, this will be your last question because the 10 minutes are up. So go ahead with your question.
Is there anything in the works at the moment that's working to protect the middle class, because that seems to bridge the gap between poverty and the rich and famous, right? So the middle class is super important, but it seems to be diminishing. How do you think the government can help bolster the middle class?
Well, I think if you're talking about helping the middle class and the lower income people, the bills I just talked to Ethan about would be perfect examples of what we're trying to do to help them. Okay, thank you all very much. Goodbye.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Ethan and Anna Marie, for participating in today's Public Affairs program. This has been Senator Chuck Grassley reporting to the people of Iowa.